Well, hello there, and welcome to my almost midlife crisis, the show that dives into that tricky time in our lives when we're no longer young, but we aren't old yet either. I'm your host, Jennifer Villamil. Today marks my official start of 37 weeks pregnant, which means it's pretty much any day now. Yay! I'm so excited. I don't know if I'm more excited to just not be pregnant or to meet my new baby girl, but either way, very exciting. Over the past month or so, we have taken 4 prenatal classes to really just help us prepare for our new addition. And not only have these been helpful, but they've also really highlighted some major differences in how our parents raised us versus the current day recommendations and just capabilities. So if you're curious on how things have changed, or maybe you've recently had to have one of these conversations with the grandparents of your child, then this one's for you. Let's dive in. Being first-time parents, we lack real-world experience. Like, let's not get it twisted. We have no real experience. Neither Christian nor I have babysitting on our resumes. It was never really a thing. I was always one of the younger ones in the neighborhood, so I never really babysat. And we have very little experience with newborns. Like, I have friends and we have family that has kids, but I haven't had a ton of exposure to newborns. And I think that lack of experience was kind of making us feel a bit insecure about her arrival, a little fear of the unknown, maybe you'd call it. Speaking for myself, I was nervous that I wouldn't know what to do, like bathing a newborn. I've never bathed a child, let alone a newborn. I mean, I've seen them get bathed. I've seen children get bathed. Like, if I was talking to my friend and she was like, I have to give so-and-so a bath, but I've never done it. And while we have computers in our hands with our phones and we could Google pretty much anything in the moment, the last thing I want to do is Google things as the baby's like crying and we're trying to figure it out. I mean, that's just like chaotic. I don't want to have to do that in real time. So as we look ahead to our baby girl joining our family, we've been trying to just gain as much knowledge as we can through books and prenatal classes. So we've taken 4 in-person classes at the hospital that I'm going to be delivering in. And those classes were, you know, labor and delivery to just understand what to expect. Cause I don't know. It's also not like something I've asked friends when they've gone through. Like, I'm not asking them intimate details about their labor and delivery. It feels really personal to me. So wanted to take labor and delivery class, understanding your newborn, which is literally like how to take care of a newborn. Breastfeeding, which I know nothing about other than milk comes from the breast, and CPR child safety. Also, I don't even think I've ever taken a CPR class, so this one was important. So each of these classes were 3 hours long, which seems insane, I'm not going to lie. And in most instances, I would say that they could have made it shorter. Like, I don't think they needed, all of them needed to be 3 hours. But like, for example, the breastfeeding class, the first 20 minutes was about the benefits of breastfeeding. Like, yeah, we know. No kidding. Like, we all signed up for this class and we're sitting here for the next 3 hours because we plan on breastfeeding. So you don't need to sell us on it. Like, we could get that 20 minutes back in our day. But make no mistake, I'm not naive. I know that taking these classes does not make us parenting experts, okay? I know that in reality, we're going to be faced with a ton of scenarios that were not covered in class and we'll need to figure it out. However, I also see a ton of benefits of these classes, and mostly it's the confidence for me. Like, after taking these classes, I feel like I have a baseline of information to use as a starting point, okay? Definitely way more than I had before. And now when I'm on pregnancy or mom forums, I actually know the answers to some of these questions. And honestly, some of these questions shouldn't be asked in public forums, but whatever. That's just my own opinion. Like, this information creates this confidence that I didn't have prior, and it's made both of us feel like we're more ready for her arrival. And honestly, like that feeling is priceless. I see a lot of first-time parents not taking classes though, and it surprises me. It almost feels like a no-brainer. Like, yeah, they cost some money, but there are options that are actually covered by insurance or provided by the city that are free to the public. Either way, in my view, it's like a why not kind of thing. Like, it seems much more productive and helpful than crowdsourcing everything via social media. But, you know, that's just me. And honestly, I've seen some really bad advice on social media as well, where I'm like, that's just completely not true. Like, that is not something that you want to do. So it's probably a safer bet as well. Before we jump into some of the generational differences on childcare recommendations, one thing that I noticed was how the language has been changed in these classes over the years to be more like inclusive and less judgmental. And listen, as a general rule of thumb, I am in full support of reducing and removing judgment from the pregnancy and parenting conversation because, you know, I say reduce. You'll notice how I said like reduce and remove. I'd love to say it should be removed entirely, but let's also be honest. There are times we're going to judge. Like, for example, when women tell me, and I've heard this from women, they're like, oh, I didn't drink at all with my first pregnancy. But then by the third, I had a drink like every day. It was no big deal. And I'm like, I'm judging you a little bit for that. Like, oh, so you care? Like, it comes across like I was more careful with my first. And then by the third, I was like, ugh, screw it. And like, if I'm your third kid, I'd be like, hey, what the hell? Like, why didn't you care as much with me? Like, I'm kind of judging you. Also, or when I see a question on a message board that asks, and I swear to God, I've seen this question, is it safe to smoke while pregnant? Like, I'm judging you. No, the answer is no. Like, obviously, the answer is no. But for the most part, we do need to mind our business and not be so judgmental of others during this process because everyone is really just trying to do their best. So I take it with a grain of salt. But when it comes to these classes, they were very non-judgmental for the most part. Like during the labor and delivery class, there was zero pressure or judgment if you want to have an epidural versus a natural birth, or like if you want a planned induction or you want to wait until the birth happens naturally. Like it was whatever you choose to do, and the way that they talked about it was like just completely like it's your choice and there's no judgment, which was great. There was also no judgment if you breastfed after delivery or if you want to just send your baby to the nursery for some rest after birth, like, which is all great. And all of this made for a very welcoming environment to learn. And I really appreciated like you could tell there was a specific effort taken to make any decision that you have to make something that was just that. It's like a personal parental decision, which I liked. Now, on the flip side, in some instances, our desire to be more inclusive was really interesting to me, and it raised the question in like three specific areas. Like, are we taking inclusivity too far? Like, are we going too far with this? And so there were three areas specifically that came up in class. So first was shifting from using the term husband or spouse to partner or support person. Like they always referred to essentially the person that wasn't giving birth to your support person or your partner. And this one I am all for. Like what's important during pregnancy, birth, and recovery is that you have support. But who this support should be is and should be broadened from just husband or spouse. This support person could be anyone that's actually going to give you helpful, positive support throughout the process. Like this could be a spouse, but it could also be a family member, or it could be a really close friend, like you name it. What matters is that you get the support that you need, and putting the label of a spouse or husband makes a lot of assumptions that could be unnecessarily taken as added pressure on the mother. So this change, I approve. I like that they made that change. The second one is using the term birthing person instead of mother. And this may be controversial, but I'm not, this is a no-go for me. It bothers me a little bit. Like, logically, I understand why this change exists. Like, I understand that the trans community or someone that identifies as a male but has female anatomy essentially could birth a child. And we want to include them in the conversation. But as a woman whose rights are in question, specifically regarding the pregnancy process, by the way, and whose struggle is often diminished in labor, delivery, and postpartum, like in those conversations, it's made to feel like it's not that big of a deal. This one hits me emotionally, and not just because I'm pregnant. Being able to create and birth a human being is an awesome responsibility, and in and of itself is not inclusive. Not everyone can do this. Like, this is not just something that every person you see can do. The term mother has a significance that I don't think it's fair to take away from those of us who do identify as women and mothers. Like, we get a lot of our accomplishments taken away or diminished already in society. And I believe that we should be able to retain this one. But I do have a recommendation, because I am sensitive to the fact that there is a group of people out there that do not identify as females that technically can birth a child. So I think it's a good compromise, and it respects all parties. So if you are someone that does not identify as a woman, but you have the ability to carry and birth a child, then call yourself a birthing person, right? Like, you can be a birthing person. And if that feels good to you, then by all means, please use it. But I just don't think the term should apply to all. Like, I do not want to be referred to as a birthing person, because to me, it feels like I now, like, my body is like not even human anymore. It's now just like its job is to birth a child. And I prefer to be called a mother. So I feel like that's a compromise. Like, if you don't want to be called a mother, you have another option, but we don't need to like blanket that across everybody, because not all of us want to be called a birthing person. So I don't know. Would love to hear your thoughts. Lastly, changing the term breastfeeding to chest feeding. This was something that was coming up, obviously, in the breastfeeding class a lot. They kept referring to it as chest feeding. And the rationale is the same as the birthing person. But this term was used during the whole breastfeeding class. And this one, I'm telling you, I think is purely useless, okay? And actually, I consider it unnecessary, because breast is not solely a female body part. I know we like to talk about female breasts like they're the only breast that exists, but all humans have breasts, all humans. It is a part of their anatomy, okay? That's why breast cancer is called breast cancer, no matter your gender or sex. Women aren't the only ones. They are the majority of the ones that get breast cancer, but they're not the only ones that get breast cancer. Men get breast cancer, and we still call it breast cancer. Okay, hell, chickens have breasts. Roosters have breasts. Like, the definition of a breast is the tissue overlying the chest or pectoral muscles. So there's no need to change this term to be inclusive. If you identify as a human, you have the ability to produce milk to feed your baby. So if you're human and you can produce milk, you are feeding from the breast. You are not feeding from the chest, because the breast lays on top of the chest and it's where the milk is produced. So from an anatomy standpoint, you are breastfeeding, period. Like, we don't need to change that one. It already has built in anatomically correct verbiage. Okay. Like, it's inclusive. It's good. So I say we go away with that one, but I think I came up with a pretty good compromise for the birthing person one, but let me know. Okay, so now in terms of the differences between generational recommendations, there are quite a few actually. And they've led to some interesting conversations with grandparents-to-be for our little girl. Nothing like crazy, you know, like no one was mad about it, but just some like interesting conversations. So in the labor and delivery class, one of the major changes is the use of the episiotomy. And for those of you that are not familiar with this process, first of all, you're lucky. But without getting too graphic, an episiotomy is when the doctor makes a cut to provide more room for the head and shoulders to come out at birth. So, I mean, you can Google for more information or pictures if you need more explanation. That's all I'm going to say on it. But this practice was almost expected when our parents gave birth. Like now it's only used in about 5% of births. And that's a huge change. Like my mom was shocked by this change and basically didn't believe me when I first told her. And I mean, why the big shift, you may ask? Like it went from pretty much 100% to around 5%. So why the change? Well, after further research, it was actually found that creating an incision actually led to greater and more severe tearing during birth. And it was just highly likely that the severity of the tear, which then obviously has recovery implications, would be worse. So logically, it makes sense if you think about it. Like I look at it, I compare it to like a piece of paper. If you hold up a piece of paper or like a paper towel, if you cut a slit in the middle and then you pull both sides, it will tear the rest of the paper pretty easily with like very little tension, right? But if you do not cut a slit and you pull both sides, you have to apply more pressure to tear through the paper. It doesn't mean that it won't tear, but it's harder to tear, right? So it's the same thing. And honestly, thank God, like I'm glad they figured this out. This is a very good change from my perspective. Some other changes in labor and delivery process that are very much welcomed is allowing a support person to be in the room, especially men. It wasn't that long ago that dads were not allowed in the labor room. And I cannot imagine Christian not being there with me, not only to help me through it, like throughout the process, but to experience the birth of his daughter firsthand. Like 50% of her is from him. Like he should be there. And it's sad to me that there was a time dads just had to wait out in the waiting room during the process. Now there's also a greater focus on keeping the baby in the room after delivery for more bonding time instead of like whisking them away for tests and et cetera. The baby nursery is there if you want it, but it's not automatic and it's more likely parents will have their newborn by their side, like in the same room, the whole hospital stay. And I like this change too, because it's so important in creating that bond emotionally, but also for breastfeeding if that's what you choose to do. When it comes to caring for a newborn, we no longer use baby powder for one. And baby powder used to be like this necessary item for newborn diaper changes, right? Like everyone had the Johnson & Johnson baby powder. Like hell, I had baby dolls like growing up that smelled like baby powder. Like we were like programmed that like baby powder, I mean, great marketing, really. We were programmed that like baby powder is like the scent for newborns. So it's like, of course you need baby powder. But now that's actually not recommended at all, because studies have shown negative effects of babies breathing the powder in. Good to know. So I'm glad we all turned out pretty good. There's also been a lot of research and a lot just more understanding of how to protect babies from SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome, which like, shit, that's a horrible name. Like that name. Thank God we just use the acronym, because if you just really spell it out, it's really depressing. But this research alone has changed a lot in the recommendations that vary how our parents raised us. So recommendations like don't allow the baby to sleep in your bed, right? But in the room is recommended. Or putting the baby to bed on their back with nothing else in the bed. No bumpers, no blankets, no stuffed animals, like nothing. And this is a big change because a lot of us were put to sleep on our stomachs or wrapped in blankets, which a lot of them still are. I mean, you know, Christian's mom brought up a good point. Like, not every place has, you know, controlled temperature inside. So it could get really cold, like in the winter, and you might have to wrap your baby in blankets. And that's true. And that's still against recommendations, but like also it's better to take the risk in that situation than have your baby freeze to death, right? Like, so it's like pick your poison, I guess. So it's like, you know, these are really ideal recommendations, but obviously that's kind of where like your instincts come in. Like I could do that, but then my baby's going to be super cold. So I need the extra blankets. Like, fine. Another difference is in the frequency of bathing a child. Like, many of us were bathed daily as babies, but now the recommendation is 2 to 3 times a week max. And this is really just to help protect that natural moisture of the skin. And I know this one has been discussed in our household quite a bit. And there's a belief that it needs to be every day because, you know, if you're logically, if you think about it, you're changing what, like 12 to 24 diapers in a day as newborns. How could they not need a bath after that, right? Like there's a lot going on down there. Like, how could you not need a bath? And just like as adults who bathe every day, it's hard to imagine at this point, like not bathing them every day. Like, how do they stay clean? But that's the recommendation because their skin is, you know, so new basically and getting exposed to things, and it can be harsh even if you use like the most gentlest shampoo and body wash or whatever. So the recommendation is no more than 2 to 3 times a week. So that's what we're going to do. And we're going to try it the way we were told in class. Cause obviously, like I said, we're not experts. So I'm going to follow their lead on this one. The COVID vaccine, that's also a new one that even parents over the past couple of years are seeing a shift, because now the COVID vaccine is available for 6-month-olds. And there's quite a debate on if this is too young. But in my opinion, it's a huge relief. Like if we don't know how things like the common cold or the flu are going to impact our little ones because they have this brand new developing immune system, we have no idea on how COVID is going to impact them in the short term or in the long term. Like, the COVID conversation in general has been one that we've had to consider that's a new challenge and at times, you know, can be polarizing depending on who you talk to. I just got my COVID booster along with my flu vaccine when I was like 35 weeks pregnant. And honestly, I've been waiting to get it since I heard the new one was available. And I was hoping I'd be able to get the shot prior to her arrival to just give her some of my antibodies, especially because she's going to be born in the fall, going into like holiday season. And like the last couple of years, we've seen spikes in COVID. And this year, they're expecting the flu to see a big spike. So it was really important to me to try to get these vaccines in quick. But I also know that not all pregnant women are comfortable with this decision. We also had to consider COVID and visitation. Like, for the most part, our close friends and family are fully vaccinated and boosted, but not everyone. So how would we do our best to protect our daughter, but also not isolate some of like the key people in our lives? So we decided we're requiring visitors to take a COVID test, no matter their vaccination status, before meeting her. And that is really just because, you know, you don't always have symptoms and you may not even know you have it, but then you're going to pass it to her who has like, again, no immune system. So we're just like, you know what, let's just test everybody. And then we at least know that day they don't have it. That doesn't mean in 5 days they won't, but that day they don't. We also, if someone is not up to date on their vaccinations, then they have to wear a mask. And all of this is really until she gets her shot at 6 months. Like, it feels fair to us, and it's what we're comfortable with as we consider that, you know, it's our job to protect her as much as we can. But did I ever think that I would have to put a plan together when I had a kid on how to try to avoid her being hit with this like global pandemic? No, I never would have thought that that was part of the plans prior to getting a kid. Getting a kid. It like sounds like, oh, I just stopped by Target and like grabbed a kid really quick. Grab some like milk and a kid. So that conversation's also been really interesting, and obviously not even generational difference. That's just even within the last couple of years difference. So, but everyone took it pretty well. So we're happy with that. Another just massive difference is the role of technology when raising our kids. I mean, think about it. Like when I was a baby, we had 6 channels on the TV. The baby monitors were like super basic, and most of our lives were analog. Now, holy cow, has technology changed the game? And in my opinion, for the most part, for the better. So take baby monitors. It is insane on how much baby monitors have changed. So we have the Nanette, which Christian is obsessed with, and he loves it. Like he found it pretty much when we first got pregnant, and he's been talking about it like this whole time. It's like his toy, like out of the baby gear. It's like the one that's his toy. And he's really excited about it. But watching TV and movies, because this is where I get a lot of my knowledge on childcare until now, at least in the past, baby monitors really left a lot to be desired. Like some of them had no camera and it was just like this walkie-talkie that just had sound. And even the sound itself was like that walkie-talkie sound, which is would drive me insane if that was like in my bedroom. They also, like, if they had a video, it was like this grainy black and white, almost like surveillance video type footage. Well, the Nanette like blows that away. And I'm sure that there's others, you know, on the market that are also really good. So I'm not saying you have to go out and buy the Nanette, but that's the one we got. And it blows it away. Like the camera is, first of all, it's in color and it's HD. So it's like legit, very clear. And the sound is super clear. It also has a sound machine built in and has a couple different sound options. Everything is managed through an app on your phone. So you don't even have additional devices needed throughout your home, which is lovely. Less just like crap lying around. And it doesn't stop there. So you can buy clothing like belly bands where you wrap, you put the baby in whatever they're sleeping. Maybe they have like a swaddle, maybe they have a sleep sack, whatever it is. And then you put this belly band over it. It goes like over the chest and stomach. And this belly band has a design, and the camera reads the design to track breathing patterns and will alert you on your phone if there's a sudden change. So you can go check on the baby. Or there's smart sheets that help track the growth of your baby. Nothing touches the baby. Like anything that is actually touching the baby, like the clothes or the sheets, has zero technology built in. It doesn't, there's no like electricity that's like touching your baby. It's more like the design on it that is read by the camera. And you can even share access to the information and the camera with other caregivers. Although this is a no-go for me. Like considering sound is included, I don't need parents hearing, like I don't need our parents hearing everything that happens or is said in the nursery. Okay. Like a little privacy would be great. I could just imagine I like wake up at like 3 in the morning for a feeding and I'm like swearing silently because I'm tired. And like my mom can hear it over like her app. Like we don't need that. How about portable bottle warmers to have in your diaper bag? Oh, yeah. Like it's called the Baby Brew, which I just, like, I love the names, like Baby Brew. That's adorable. Yeah, little portable bottle warmer that brings your milk or formula to room temperature in like 60 seconds. Like, great. or bottle sterilizers, and even microwave bags that sterilize and clean your breast pump parts instead of having to hand wash everything. Like, yeah, I got those too. Like, I'm all for it. Like, if something makes it easier for me, like, I'm all for it. How about the plethora of apps and information just at our fingertips in our phone? Like, each of the classes we went to actually provided in-app information. They provided trackers and like all sorts of support via an app. And there's also some great podcasts that have fairy tales for your kids. So you can like play that, or like there's a ton around like parenting tips and advice for parents, or online shopping. I mean, online shopping and next day delivery, game changer. Like, talk about making your life easier. I mean, our parents would have to get in the car and go to the store with like a 2-day-old newborn. Like, they'd be like, oh, I didn't realize I needed this. And then they'd have to like go to the store. We don't have to do that. We pretty much have everything we need to start. At least I think so. But I'm also like not worried about it, because if I run out of something or realize I need it, I could just order it on Amazon and have it delivered tomorrow. Or I can order groceries to be delivered postpartum instead of trying to bring a week old newborn to the store. Hell, if I want postpartum, I don't have to leave my bed other than use the bathroom. Like, I could just sit there, breastfeed, put baby down for a nap, watch some Netflix, turn the lights on and off via my Google Home app, FaceTime with my pediatrician to ask for a question, adjust the household temperature via my Nest thermostat, order more toilet paper online, and pay the bills on my phone, all without setting a foot on the floor. Now, if we could only get guaranteed maternity and paternity leave, then we'd be all set. But baby steps, folks, apparently, baby steps. It's pretty remarkable how quickly new recommendations are developed and how raising children has changed between and within generations. And this can be overwhelming. But what I've also learned through this process is that all children really need is food, shelter, clothing, and lots of love. It doesn't matter how you feed your baby. What matters is that they're fed. It doesn't matter if you have the best tech. What matters is you pay attention to how they're adjusting and you ask your pediatrician whenever you're concerned. Whether you're a first-time parent or it's your fifth or more, which God bless you, I don't know how you do that, your instincts will play a huge, huge role in the development of your child. So don't get overwhelmed by all the information. Just use it to build your confidence and then let your instincts kick in. Kind of like the rest of your life, isn't it? Thank you so much for joining me today. Please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Join me on my social channels to get more content and inspiration. You can follow my Almost Midlife Crisis on all the social channels. You can also check out my new YouTube channel with videos on the episodes. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you are always up to date on the latest episodes. And you can sign up for written transcripts delivered right to your inbox at myalmostmidlifecrisis.com. Until next time.